Hi, guys. Welcome to No Quitters with Dan Ray
and Benny Salcido. So we have here, we have a special guest, and we've been waiting to get him on, and finally he's available. But this is, you're talking about mega star, and what him and his family have built is incredible, and we're so blessed to have him here to be able to share his story. And here we have Oscar Ramos.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You know, you were telling me that your family came from being a plumber, right? That's how you guys started.
Yeah. So my dad in the early 90s, probably before that, just started like his own plumbing company. My dad's originally from the East Coast.
Okay.
So my dad's Puerto Rican, my mom's Mexican. They met in New York, moved to the LA, and he came out here and was like, well, let me start doing something new.
Let me just put this real quick. You guys started from plumbing, right?
Correct.
And then at what point, how much houses do you guys own at your highest point? How many doors?
At the highest point, we owned about 1,400 units.
From being a plumber to 1,400 units, guys. You guys got to listen to this story.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think it's a lot of times it's just like a lot of dedication, a lot of effort when you're going out there. But he started just doing simple plumbing jobs, and we bought our first house, or my parents bought their first house. We used to live right there on right behind the Western Auto in the city of Bell.
Yeah.
So, and it's still there. So if you ever drive by and they want to see it, it's there. It's you'll see a fence in it.
You still own that house?
We don't own it anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. We moved.
Traded up?
Yeah, traded up.
Smart.
Exactly.
Good.
You know, everyone goes from Bell to Downey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the move. So yeah, so we were in the city of Bell. He bought the first house, we remodeled it, made it a two-story.
Okay.
So after he made it a two-story, he bought the neighbor's house to the left of us.
Uh-huh.
So he bought that house. And
this was still in the 90s?
I'm sorry?
Still in the 90s or?
Yeah, this was still in the 90s. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. So still in the 90s. It's probably before 90. My dad started buying like heavy real estate, like 92.
Got it.
Wow. Yeah, so that's when he was really.
What year did they come here to Bell from New York?
I would probably say right like 79, 80.
Okay, yeah. So 79, 80, and he did plumbing, and he started buying. What year was when he bought his first property? Do you know?
So I would want to say maybe 87.
Okay.
85 around there.
So he started in 87, 89, let's say.
Yeah.
And fast forward, well, in 2000, you said about 2000, they had 100 doors, right?
Yeah, so in 2000, they had 100 doors. That's when I came on board. I came on in 2001.
Okay.
So I came on in 2001. I actually got fired from my job, from my real job, and started working with my family.
Okay.
So, and I started jumping from jobs to job. And at the end of the day, he had mentioned, he said, hey, I need your help. You know, I need your help. We already had a little bit over 100 doors.
Okay. And what were you doing before that he wanted you to come here, so just so they know?
Yeah, so I was doing construction. Mm-hmm. So you know, I went to school for fiber optics.
Okay.
Kind of weird, yeah. So that's what I went to school for. I went to a trade school. My goal was, I had a construction background because of my dad. So when I was like 16 years old, my dad would go, oh, you want a pair of Jordans? Like, cool. He's like, go to work. And go
you gotta work for him.
Yeah, you gotta work for him. So when I went to Bosco Tech.
Okay.
Bosco Tech has they have a construction program. So what's funny about this program, when I was like 16, 17, I would take my my friends, we would go do plumbing jobs on the weekend. Yeah, so we would just go. You got two kids showing up with like wife beaters to go do jobs. So we'd go to people's houses and we'd do plumbing jobs that my dad would refer us.
Plumbers.
Yeah. So we did work as wow. as kids, and we would, you know, buy our shoes and buy whatever we needed at that time. So it was fun.
Wow.
So just a little different.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of like how a lot of us were raised. Like if you wanted something, you had to put in.
Yeah, you got to hustle.
Yeah, you got to earn it.
Right.
Yeah, that's, and I think that's what somewhat of, I think a lot of people now, it's learning skills, right? At the end of the day, I think most people forget that, you know, my mom used to push to tell us all the time. She would say, I don't care what you learn, as long as you do the best you can, understand it the best you can,
right?
Because no one's going to take that away from you. Mm. And that was a big takeaway. So I was big about, if you're going to do something, learn it, understand it, accept it. If you don't like it, then great. If you do like it, then even better, right? But so when we did plumbing, like, I don't know, I was, there's not a lot of 16-year-olds that know how to weld copper.
Right. And you were welding at 16.
Yeah, my dad would throw us underneath the house and he'd go, hey, go weld, because he didn't fit. Like, my dad was a bigger dude. So he's like, hey, you got to go into your house. And he's like, just connect them and just weld it together. So sure enough, like.
You know, it's amazing that you say that your mom used to tell you, you got to learn it and then understand it.
Yes.
Right? Because a lot of people, they, nowadays, they walk around like they know everything, but they don't really understand it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's like some wisdom right there.
It's important, I think. Most of the time that people walk around not understanding what they're doing,
okay, right?
And we get this all the time, you know, even when we started buying real estate and, my father started buying real estate. It would have been really easy to say, hey, I'm the owner's son, check me out. Like, I'm going to tell these guys what to do. So the old man was like, yeah, you're here, but you're here to work. You're going to physically work with these guys. And I was like, man, I was making $80,000 at doing fiber work at schools. And I had purchased a brand new Lexus IS.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was like probably 21 years old. I thought I was like the coolest guy. Yeah. You know, that was so cool. And I was like, oh, I got a Lexus and it's cool. And, you know, I technically quit / got fired, but When I went to work with them, I was making $32,000. So I went from 80 to 32,000.
Major pay cut.
And I was upset. I was mad. I was frustrated. And I was physically working now. So now it was like labor. So it's like labor. And the first project we go to, City of Compton, we're in Compton, is a condemned building. The first day my dad was there, there was a shootout the first day. There was 24 units, half of it vacant. Nobody was paying rent. There was a shootout in the building.
In that building. Holy moly.
Yeah. My dad tells me, it's really cool. Like my dad tells me the next day, he goes, we're going to go to this building. And my mom was freaking out. Like, you're not going to take him. He's going to get shot. Like, he's not going. And my dad told me, really, I'll never forget this. He told me a cool thing. He said, he's like, you worked for this building? Don't let anyone ever take it away from you.
Mm.
And I was, you know, I'm there like, I'm going to get shot. Like, I'm going to get shot. Like,
scary.
Like, yeah, it's scary. Like,
you put in work for this building. You guys put in work to buy this building. And the people that were there were trying to take it away.
The occupants.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to scare you. Yeah, it was all gangs.
Gangs trying to intimidate you guys.
Yeah, to back away so they can keep doing what they were doing.
Yeah, exactly. And so your pops is like, how old are you?
I was probably 21.
He looks at you and tells you, hey, you work for this stuff. Yeah. Don't let nobody take it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But you're thinking, Dad, but there was a shootout there yesterday. Exactly. Like,
yeah.
That's different.
And this is it. Yeah. You're like, I don't know about how much I really like this, you know? But I think it was cool to just go. And it's funny because my dad's really been like a role model on a lot of the work. Because he not only will... To this day, my dad's 84 and he still goes to work. He's still hustling.
We'll talk about having a foundation.
Yeah, yeah. So the hustle is still there. And I remember, and you guys are in real estate, so you guys understand this. Like, we go there, vacant apartment, toilet is in bad condition. You see all these guys, all the team, there was like 24 of us, like maintenance guys. So we're going and everybody goes into this one bathroom.
The worst.
And they're like, nope, nope, nope. And here walks my dad with the auger. And he walks in and he's like, all of you, chillones. And we're just like, oh my God. just brutal. Just brutal.
And he did it himself.
He did it himself. And you know, he walked away and we're just like, this is disgusting. Like, this is disgusting. But he didn't care. He's just like,
everybody was on their feelings.
He was beyond that. He's like, yeah, this is whatever. Yeah. He's like, just part of the work.
Yeah. He's like, come on, man. Come on. He's like, we got to finish these. And sure enough, like, you know, that was like my first like real introduction to the family business.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just a matter of, he was just really consistent about buying.
Before you move on, what happened after that story where your dad's like, hey, we're going to walk in. Did you guys walk in?
To the apartment. The
apartment building with the shootout.
That's where the auger was.
Oh. It was in that building.
Yeah, it was in that building.
Did they approach you? Did they confront you?
No. Nobody approached you?
You guys just went and did your thing.
Yeah, we just walked in 24.
Vacant units?
Exactly.
That was a difference.
Yeah, that was a difference. Yeah, we went 24 guys deep, and then we were really consistent. Like, my mom is, she really emphasizes on, like, let's use the law as much as we can. And I think in that time frame, right, in 2001, law was a little different. And I think we had some support. But I think a lot of times going into those buildings, it is scary.
Yeah.
And I think it's a lot of times, too, it's just having a conversation like, hey, you're probably not going to win this battle. Right. So one of us is going to have to leave. So,
right. I mean, we hear stories all the time. Oh, I used to live in the hood and all this stuff, but talk about a takeover.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You bought the building. Now you got to basically kick everybody out.
Deal with all the mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You're stopping their businesses because they sell stuff out of there. They do all kinds of stuff.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And that's the thing. I think
about being not feared.
Well, the problem is a lot of times people say, like, I always think this, right? You guys come across guys all the time and say, I want to get a good deal.
Right.
Everybody wants a good deal.
Sure.
Trust me. And if I had a good deal, I probably wouldn't sell it to you.
Right.
You know, but are you willing to put in the work for that good deal?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because some of that work is scary. Like, it is.
Like, you got to go.
There's a lot involved.
Yeah. Well, you don't know what to expect.
Where was this at?
Right.
This was in Compton.
Compton.
So by the Compton Swap Meet. I don't remember the street, but by the Compton Swap Meet. Yeah, it's just a different, you got to go in and you got to, but that building and that lesson was a huge, we actually sold that building to buy in Nevada.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
So go back a little. I want you to tell us, it sounds like your dad made you hustle, made you work.
Mm-hmm.
At what age did he make you start working, helping?
Like the plumbing?
Like, or anything, like you had a responsibility to help.
I mean, if my sister was here, she'll tell you, I wanted to buy Voltron when I was 6 years old.
Okay.
And my dad made me save up my money and she had to take me to go buy it. And we went in the bus to go buy Voltron.
Wow.
Yeah. So my dad's always been like,
he doesn't easily give you things. No.
He's very,
you work for it.
Yeah. You got to work. Like, you got to work.
If at 6 years old.
That's what I call a role model right there.
Man. Yeah.
Well,
yes.
You don't, I think at that time, you don't understand it.
Right.
You don't understand it. Like,
what were you feeling back then?
Oh, yeah. It sucks.
Hate
like,
it.
Yeah. I would hate it because I would have to go and I would have to carry the pipe wrench. And, you know, I'm like, pipe wrench is the size of like half my size. And I'm like carrying it and taking it to him. And, but I, so like.
With on, the Lexus?
No. That's when I was a kid. Like, when I was a kid. Like, one thing, you know, I would have to go to work and go to on the weekends and go do jobs with my dad. And he would pay me like $5 or $10 a day.
No days off.
Yeah. No, it was like.
And he'll tax you.
And he didn't tax me. That was a good thing. He was like all cash. I was like, yeah, I'll buy my kicks at the Bell Swap Meet, you know. But like, he would have me go and he wouldn't give me, like, when I was younger, he didn't give me too hard of a job. But like, it was like, one thing I would do is like framing nails. I would like smash the tips on the. Framing.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, so there was like things like that I was doing when I was a kid. And then, of course, I would do travesuras, just like jumping off trees and doing all sorts of dumb.
Typical kid stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, I again, you know, in hindsight, right, looking back and you just see what the skills have translated to life now, it's a big deal. It makes a world of a difference because I think a lot of men and women now are playing to go and clog a main line. They're charging $1,000.
Jeez.
You know, we were doing those things for like $150 back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just different. Yeah. So it's very, very different.
And you manage your own properties. You have your own management company.
Correct. That's actually how I started. Yeah.
And you have your crews that handle, I mean, you don't call a plumber anymore. You have your crews that handle all the plumbing, whatever needs to be done.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So one of the greatest things about that my family made me do, and it was like myself and my older brother. So we had to learn and work with the guys, how to plaster a wall, The plumbing side was easy.
That's the understanding part of
it. That's the understanding
part. Knowing how to do the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Because the problem is this, is that you can hire any professional out there, give or take. Doesn't mean it's correct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or hopefully they're teaching you something. Like, I was the guy that I would call someone and, you know, I didn't know how to, electric water heater, for example. I don't know how to install those things. So I would stand there and watch the guy do it. And it's like, look, I'm just trying to see what you're doing and trying to understand it. But my family was really big about understand how to do the work, because it's hard to call a guy and say, hey, man, you know, you've been in this apartment for 6 days. You know, you can go change a faucet in 15 minutes. Or if something breaks on there and it's now 2 hours.
Right.
You need to be able to call the guy and say, hey, why did it take you 2 hours to do this?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
The understanding part, I mean, it basically keeps people from bamboozling you.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I mean, so we did everything. So when with like my dad taught me, I would say 90% of the plumbing work. And then I never got into electrical just because I didn't like it, but all framing work, roofing, like, yeah, we would just go to work with those guys and we would have to learn. My dad, you know, if there was a roofer was there, mm-hmm. you know, the guy, rest in peace, he one of the guys that taught me,
mm-hmm.
he was like, hey, you're gonna jump on the roof with us, and your dad said you got to go up there and
I'm coming.
Yeah, and we're gonna hot mop. And I'm like, yeah, I don't, you know, I'm the owner's son. Yeah, right. Like, that doesn't fly. Like,
so exactly.
Yeah, get I'm up the there. Owner's son. He's like, yeah, I don't care who you are. Like, you're jumping on the roof.
Go grab the mop.
Yeah. My dad would always joke. He'd be like, get on the roof. Dad, I'm afraid of heights. He goes, no vas a pasar el piso.
You're going to stop right here.
This is the limit, man.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. It's
like, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to learn and understand the time, everything about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, I mean, you talk about getting to 100 houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone teach your dad how to do that? Because going from 1 to 100, I mean.
So my mom is, she studied accounting in Universidad de Puebla.
Okay.
So, and then when she was here, she worked for a couple like tax preparers and accountants. So I think she was just, like, I think work is work. You know, like literally what my parents were doing, which no one understood, it was just a force appreciation. Like literally is what they were doing, right? So they were buying these under market value properties or distressed properties. They would fix them up and then, you know, raise the rent. Like it's really what they were doing. So I think my mom is like the brains behind the financing and the numbers. Like, okay, we're going to pay this. We got to make a profit of this. And that's what we need to stick to. So
your dad was just a machine.
Yeah, my dad was just like, okay, yeah,
machines.
yeah, just let me just keep working. I think the other big thing is that while we still had these units, my dad was still doing plumbing jobs. That's where I think it was one of the biggest differences, mm-hmm. because when we started getting to that over that 100 mark, my dad acquired a partner, which is my uncle. So mm-hmm. my uncle's from Puerto Rico, and my uncle's a extremely intelligent person. He's a civil engineer out there, and he funded my dad to start, like $500,000, I believe, was like the original amount. So he helped my dad to start building their portfolio.
Was that when he first started buying, or at a certain point when he was already had
yeah built? No. Now the money came in when he was probably like 30, 40 units.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Cause he saw the possibility and he's like, dude.
Yeah. So, and I think my dad understood that sometimes you just need a partner. And my uncle was generous enough to say, hey, like, let me help you. You know, I'm doing really well in Puerto Rico. The profit I have, it doesn't affect me. And what my uncle was making out there, he's building 300-400 condos in Puerto Rico. So what's 500,000 bucks? Like it's.
That was his own projects.
Yeah.
His company.
Yeah, his company.
Wow.
Yeah, they still
take the $500,000 off the pity cash box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's I mean, it's money like that. They're like, yeah, just here you go. Like,
nice.
Some change. You know.
So yeah. Your pops takes it to about 30. Your uncle helps him invest with him.
Mm-hmm.
He takes it to 100, and then they say, hey,
I need your
come help. Work over here.
Yeah, I need your help.
And you scaled it to 1,400.
Yes. So, from 2001 to 2004. I would say 2003. So all I was doing was I would work from 6 a.m. to about 4 p.m. And then I was going to school at the Apartment Association. So in Long Beach.
You were going to school there?
Yeah. So I was going to school there. I would take all the classes, taking all the certified apartment management courses, which is the CAM courses.
Mm-hmm.
So I took all of those. I took my CCIM, which is like, anyone that knows, that's like a master's in real estate. So I took those courses, acquired my real estate license. So all I was doing, taking accounting classes during that time frame.
Wow.
So I was trying, so I would go to school, I would go in the morning and then go to school, go in the, work in the morning, go to school. And that was my schedule for about 3-4 years. At the meantime, we were still buying real estate. So we bought a project on Prospect Engage in the city of Bell.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 36 units, condemned building, the city wanted to condemn that building. And that's how we were just trying to buy buildings like that.
Yeah.
So we would go in and we would, that was like my first real project of architectural. I had to
bring deal it back with the, to code.
Yeah, bring it back to code, go to the city. So not only was I learning in school, I was actually like physically doing
hands on.
Yeah. Hands on. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know how to read, like I kind of knew how to read plans, but I didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like my first like real project that my dad's like, you're in charge of this, you take care of it. I don't know, I was probably like a year and a half in, 2 years working. And he's like, yeah, we got to get this thing up to code. So, and we bought it for 800,000, 32 units.
32 units.
Condemned.
Wow. Yeah.
So we probably put about 500, 600,000 into it. We took out a couple of the units. So it's 24 units now, but those 24 are all 2-bedroom, 1-bath. You know, but it was a full remodel. Like,
yeah.
Did everything. We had to do all the frame. We did a bunch of framing work. So again, like everything I was like learning, I learned in high school growing up was all applied there, you know, on that one. That was like a big, big project for me.
So once you were done with that project, there really was nothing you couldn't handle.
I think,
I mean, here you go. First project, 30 yeah, houses.
Dude.
Damn, you got to bring it up to code.
Mm-hmm.
Figure it out.
Not yeah. A duplex, but 30 something yeah, so units. But
it was not getting the no, right? Because the next project we had was on Florence and Wilcox.
Okay.
You know, if you know that area, there's like a lot of motels.
Mm-hmm. Bell Gardens?
Bell.
Okay, it's still yeah, Bell.
Yeah, but still Bell. It's like, it's actually a catacorner to the Hillitrope property. But okay. That building was a motel with kitchenettes, a bath, and so there were studios.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad calls me and says, hey, what do you think of buying this 40, I think it was 48 units. What do you think if we bought this 48 unit building? I'm like, this is like, there's drug addicts and prostitutes. And he's like, yeah, don't worry about that part. He's like, we'll be fine. Yeah, he's like, we'll be fine.
He saw past everything.
Yeah, so he's like, we'll be fine. And we purchased it not knowing what the hiccups were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look back in the past, like we actually had to remove a whole section for a fire truck to be able to drive in and out.
Oh yeah.
So again, just jumping through obstacles of learning, okay, now I got to go to the city. I got to talk to someone. How do I get a semi truck in here? What do I have to remove
Jeez.
To get it to work? Right. So it was, you know, my father saying like, well, we already got it. Like, what are you going to do about it? It's like, well, okay, well, I guess I got to figure it out. Figure it out. Yeah.
Think about like, man, this is probably, let's just get rid of it or.
No, I think it was, I think I didn't know enough back then. Unfortunately, I think not that I know too much now, but I feel that sometimes we shy away from projects because we're
scared.
Know. Yes. We're scared. We're just like, should I?
A monster like that behind you, pushing you forward, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think back then it was just like, this is our building, figure it out. And you're like, okay, well, that's what I'll do, you know? So, yeah. So then in 2004, after we finished Florence and Prospect, at that point, we sold our Compton building. And we sold a building, we bought an office building and sold a building that we had in Huntington Park. We sold those two buildings. And then the plan was we bought 87 units in Las Vegas, right on University and Spencer. townhouse style, and that was
new.
No, 82. No, 78. Yeah, 78. So it was 87. No, it's 87 units. We bought it for 40 a door. And my dad was like, all right, you got to figure out how to manage this remotely. Well, since I went to school for TCOM and fiber, so I was like, okay, well, I understand we need a server. And so I, you know, I just like glued some stuff together. I was like, okay, this should work. So they would remote log in to our server in California, and like we were setting all of that stuff up.
Wow.
So it gave us the ability to, so that was my first building out of state. And that was also like a gang infested building. It was on a really bad, it's called a Section 42 loan, which is low income housing essentially. And you have to, you can't raise a rent depending on the income that people make. So it's just a really tricky loan. Yeah, it's a really tricky loan. So again, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. It's just like, we have this building, figure it out, let's manage it. And at that time, I was commuting Monday through Friday. So Monday through Friday, I was Sunday night, I would leave to Vegas, work there from Monday to Friday. Friday night, I would drive back home. So, and I did that for 5 years.
Damn.
Yeah.
Now, during this time, did you ever think of, I'm done, I'm freaking exhausted, I don't want to do this shit anymore? Anything ever cross your mind saying, I'm going to go screw this
thing,
or yeah, I'm going to do my own?
What? You know, I think I did have a small turning point. So we had the 87 units.
The Vegas one.
The Vegas one. Then we purchased the property next door, which is 127 units.
Is this mm-hmm. before 2008?
This is before 2008, yeah.
Okay.
So we went on a rampage from 2004 to 2008. So from 2004, between that time frame, we bought 87 units, Las Vegas. We bought 127 in Las Vegas next door. And then we bought a
100 and some change already there.
Yeah, 280 units on Spencer and Spencer and Desert Inn, which is across the street from the convention center. And at that building, that was somewhat of a turning point because it was three parcels across the street from the convention center. And it was like the closest time I almost got stabbed there. So that was like a small portion of my life that I was like, I don't know if I can keep doing this. Like this is, it's getting dangerous. And I think my dad started realizing like, okay, this is starting to grow so big that if something happens to him, no one can handle it. So at that point, I think some fear started kicking in. I'm not going to say it wasn't, you know?
Wow.
But yeah, so we had-
Your dad never vocalized that, right?
He's, No. Why would he? Never. Why would he didn't say that?
He's just going to push you till the wheels fall off.
Yeah. So, but I think, but after that, you know, we sold that building and we started buying in Arizona.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So we sold that building, and that was a huge, we were buying buildings and just buying and flipping at that point.
So your dad's your mentor pretty much, and your hands are in the fire learning as you go.
Correct.
And did you have any other mentors?
Yes.
That helped change the game for you guys?
Yeah, I had a phenomenal, I would say that we had a banker. She's amazing. She's still an amazing person. Her name is Linda Rodriguez.
Okay.
And what she did was when we were buying all this real estate, we didn't really know what we were doing. I just knew we buy the property, put your head down, let's push forward and just do what we do, you know? And as long as we keep fighting to doing what we're doing, we're okay. Not understanding that there's some more intricate pieces to it. Right? We didn't understand the financing portion of it. We didn't understand bulk buying. We didn't understand, you know, security and like certain things that we just we were too busy on rehabbing and putting a body in there. You know, rehab, let's rehab it, put a body, rehab, put a body. Right. So that was the thing. So she stepped in when we had our Arizona buildings, and it was interesting because she said, she's like, you don't know what you're doing. And I'm like, looking at her like, what do you mean I don't know what I'm doing?
Look what we have.
I'm sitting almost at 1,400 apartments and I don't know what I'm doing. And she's like, yeah, you don't know what you're doing. And this was probably like 2006, 2007.
Okay.
So the storm was coming, you know? So, and we were placed in loans that didn't make sense.
She pretty much discovered that for you guys.
Yes.
You uncovered it.
Yeah. So
what did you think when she's like, hey, you don't really know what you're doing here, huh?
I think I'm not going to lie. Between 2000, when I was 24 to 27, I think my ego was just too big.
Got it.
You know, I went from like looking at buying a private jet, buying a helicopter. Like I was like, oh, I'm going to buy this so I don't have to fly. I can fly.
And I don't want to drive anymore.
I don't want to drive anymore. I don't need to. Like I can just, you know, I was driving all three states. Like 1 week I was in Vegas. One week I was in Arizona. And 1 week I was in California. Literally, that was my life for almost like 8 years. And that was hard. So I was looking at, like, for someone to tell you, you don't know what you're doing. And still
you had given it your all, your
exactly,
and doing well,
yeah, and doing well. Right. Yeah, I mean, when we had everything was on, I'll never forget this, on full cylinders. When our Arizona, we had a property in Mesa, like where Mesa Community College is.
Mm-hmm.
It was 320 or 340 units there. That building, we're walking away with almost like $230,000 profit
per month, yeah.
And I look like I was like the smartest guy in the world. Like I was like, look at me, I'm so cool. Like I bought this building and look what I'm doing. And like, it's 90% occupied. Like I'm crushing it, you know? And, you know, and then 2008 came. So
right.
2008 came and
everything. Get into 2008.
Mm-hmm.
What did you feel like? You had to have some sort of like understanding when someone just basically insults you, mm-hmm. right? And to be like, well, show me how, right?
Yeah.
You have to have some sort of wisdom to at least let someone show you how.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I think one of the hardest things was accepting it.
Right.
You know?
It's like a one conversation. Hey, you don't know what you're doing. Let me show you what's
up. No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. She called me and said, this loan that you have, it was a Vegas loan. She's like, you haven't noticed that every 18 months, 3 years, you're refinancing? I'm like, I thought it was just
normal.
And she's like, someone's taking advantage of you and you're not realizing it.
He was loading his pipeline.
Exactly. Yeah. And wow. I didn't see that. And my parents didn't know either, right? Because we're so busy looking for new property to buy. I'm looking at, you know, how many more employees do I need? What are the new rents going to be for this project? You know, what's going to be, where are we going to refinance? Right. I was looking at that. And then my mom was taking care of like all the bills. Like,
and your older brother's involved in the business at all?
My older brother, he was in charge of like most of the maintenance guys.
Oh.
So my brother's up.
Servicing them.
Yeah. So he was big about, hey, there's, you know, we got X amount of apartments. Like I'll go pick up the material. So I was kind of overseeing everything. So my job was to oversee the building and the performance of the property. My dad was helping me making sure that we got the properties up to par. And then it was my job to maintain performance, you know, and that's a big task, especially when someone throws a curveball and says, you don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter how good my performance was, I couldn't keep up with the new rates or the new adjustments.
You didn't have time for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, and no one was looking out for your best interest. Exactly.
Well, no one was explaining it too. You know, it's easy. Everyone always says they have your back until they don't. Right? Until they're like, oh, well, now I'm stuck in this position. Like, I'll never forget this. That 320 unit building, that was like the first That was the first toppling to the chess piece, right? Mm-hmm. But that building, we listed it. We owned it for, I don't know, 8 months, 9 months after rehab, probably invested about $1 million into it. And the agent was like, you know what? Someone reached out that they want to make an offer. And we purchased it. We were probably like $16 million in total. And he's like, let's list it. He's all, we have someone that's interested in your building. Not knowing what he was doing is, again, he's just loading his pipeline, right? Like, not thinking about that.
Wow.
So he tells us that we list it for sale. There's like three guys that are the brokers. And the gentleman that was here that told me to list it, we got an offer for like $19 million. This is right before 2008. $19 million. And my dad was like, man, that's a great, like, dude, we're 16 in, we're gonna walk away with $3 million. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget this. He said, you can probably get 20. Just wait a little bit and get the 20. And I sat there and I'm like, and I'm doing my numbers, and he kind of preloaded the numbers for me. Like, well, if you do this and you do that, your cap rate's here. And again, I knew what I was looking at, but not at the level I look at him now.
Yeah.
And he preloaded me, right? So I fell for it. I fell for it, and I said, yeah, you know what? You're right. We can sell it for $20 million to 2-1. This is like, we owned the building for 8-9 months.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about falling for it. No one really expected it would happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the rate that it was growing, I mean, yeah, you could have gotten 20, 21, maybe 22. You know what I mean? It was going pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. So that was the first topple piece that went down, you know, and that was rough.
Damn.
You
know?
Now walk us when 2008 starts hitting you.
So 2008 starts hitting, and they start realizing, you know, we start realizing that, you know, so what was tricky about that building was it was a three-story building, right? And we thought it was like a management style issue, you know? So we started thinking it's a management style issue. We had all the top floor units were vacant on the third floor.
So the reason why it wasn't filled?
It wasn't filled, yeah.
It was because of a management style.
Yeah, so I was like, you know, I'm doing something wrong. I was like, I need to figure this out. So we started, we started doing market analysis, market comps, started doing what I know how to do, right? So we're starting to reach out to people, start reaching out to Section 8, like, okay, how can we fill these units? And what we started realizing is that at that point, you know, this is like a real estate rule, but especially when you buy in high dense areas, you never want to buy a building where there's hundreds of buildings. Right? Because what people do is when they get evicted,
they move to the next one.
Just move to the next one. It's just, you know, it's unit.
Convenient.
Yeah, exactly. It's just unit hopping. So what ends up happening, they were doing this. So people were just leaving, like not paying rent, and they just couldn't pay, or they lost their jobs or whatnot. And then they would leave and they would just jump to the next unit. Long story short is that we couldn't get those units. We fired everyone. It's like, okay, it's the staff. They're stealing money, or there's a bunch of vacancies. Like, it's a staffing issue.
So you went from being management, now it's the staff.
Correct. I was looking, instead of like looking at myself to blame, I was looking at everybody else.
Who can I blame?
And I wasn't trying to, I was really trying to figure out the problem, but it seemed that no one gave me the answer I wanted to hear, right? And, you know, because of the financing, the way the financing was designed, there was no way I was going to get out of it. There's just no way. I was just going to get stuck. And that's when, again, luckily, Linda Rodriguez stepped in and said, look, this is a problem. Like, these are the issues you're having, and this is how you need. So at that point is where I really started listening, because I said, okay, I'm going into territory that I don't understand, because I look like a hero from 2001 to 2008, you know, that I knew, you know,
I was wearing a cape for almost a decade.
Exactly. So I'm like, I know what I'm doing. You know, at that point I had to sit back and say, okay, I really got to listen. like, I really need to listen and figure out what's going on here.
And she came in right when the problem was in hand.
Correct. So she had, it's actually really cool. She had decided to, she knew the market was at a turning point. So she actually was, took some time and retired. Wow. And she said, well, I'm going to help you. So we actually hired her as a property manager.
Wow.
Yeah. So now I had full access to her, you know, doing reports, underwriting, analyzing how a property really needs to be broken down. And yeah, she was making good money and we were paying her salary, but that's well spent money.
Mm-hmm. You know? Things that you needed to know.
Exactly. She's like, look, there's not much that's going to save you from, you know, if you can probably sell this building. And sure enough, we, you know, it's just started, the deeper 2008 got, the harder it became. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we ended up doing a short sale on that building. You know, we lost that one and one other one. And again, it was just realizing that, you know, we didn't know it all. You know, we needed to understand the financing aspect of it.
Yeah.
Like that was just the, you know.
I mean, you got to 1,400 units, not knowing anything about what kind of loans you,
correct,
you were in.
Yeah, correct.
Right. And I mean, that's a, I mean, it's still a significant accomplishment.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's say 2008 hits. How many units did you guys end up short selling?
700.
700?
Yeah. So half per se.
Yeah.
Half.
What were you thinking when you're like, all right, we just lost 700 homes or doors?
That was rough, man. That was a really, really, really challenging time of my life because, you know, I think it was, it creates a obstacle of issues, right? Because we still had a partner with my uncle. So my uncle thought we were stealing money.
Oh,
you know, right. I start questioning all my management technique, you know, I
yourself.
Joke. Yeah. I joke. Cause I was, you know, and I say this proudly, like I went from like looking at private jets to helicopters to driving a Prius, like literally what happened. Like I was like, man, like this is hard. Like this is really hard.
Right.
Your life switched upside down. You know, yeah. Nothing wrong with anyone that drives a Prius. I'm not saying that, but I was just like, you know, this is really challenging. So probably since like 2008, all the way to like 2011, I just really went like dormant. You know, I went to school. I needed to focus. I actually opened up a gym. You know, just because that was like my escape. Yeah. So I opened up
2008 hits. You're like, you step away from the job that you were doing with your.
I didn't step away. I mean, I just wasn't there.
Changed his focus for.
Yeah. I didn't, you know, you sit when you do mistakes like that, you start blaming yourself most of the time.
Right.
And I mean.
And you isolate.
Yeah. Yeah. You isolate. And I think what the most important was, how am I going to fix this? Or why did this happen?
Right. Because people are out there thinking about just calling it quits when they lose their girlfriend. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
You lost 700 units.
Yeah. I think like there's just like certain times that you really need to like sit down and like look at yourself.
Right. Right.
Right. And I think I sat there and I really needed to like take it all in. Right. Right. Because not only do you feel like a failure to your like family,
right,
you know, to your team, your staff, mm-hmm, like that's really hard. Like that's really, really hard because, mm-hmm, you know, we had, if I remember correctly, like Nevada was 46 employees, Arizona, there was, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, I take that back. 26 in Nevada, 46 in Arizona. And 10 of 15 in California,
mm-hmm,
not including all the office staff, not including all the district managers. Like, they were, I mean, it was a,
you had district managers.
Yeah. This is,
it was a corporate setup.
Yeah.
You set it up right.
A whole corporate setup with not a lot of knowledge.
With regions.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
and you were so busy trying to accomplish and acquire things, but not really focused on becoming.
Correct.
What you needed to become.
And I think one of the hardest things for most people is that you know, I consider it just like gambling, right? When you're on a roll, you forget when you need to slow down or stop, right?
Or pull out.
Yeah, pull out. So
I think the brakes at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Just pull on.
Yeah, you just start going in, right? And I dedicated probably 3 to 4 years on just understanding financing, economics. Like I was like, okay, I need to understand this because I'm not going to let this happen again. You know, so I sat down and luckily my wife is in finance and she's like, okay, you need to like learn this. Like you need to understand how this works. And, you know, her and I never really talk about like stuff like that at home, but I really needed to spend time to understand it. Right. And I needed to go to school and I started working with different mortgage brokers and just working with different people. Specialists
right.
in that industry. So if you're a mortgage broker that did commercial, I wanted to work with you. So I started working at Marcus & Millichap. Like, you know, I was interning there. I did an intern at Cushman Wakefield. Like I needed to understand exactly how everything works. So instead of just like,
winging it.
Yeah, really. Like I didn't know how to do a listing contract.
You got to 1,400 units just winging it.
Yeah. You know? Literally. Imagine that. Well, it's just hard work, right? Yeah. Like at the end of the day, really is just hard work, you know? But, you know, if someone puts you in the wrong position, you know, it doesn't matter how much hard work my dad would say, he's like, you could be in the kitchen wanting to make the best meal. But if you use the wrong ingredients, it's a crappy meal.
Yeah.
You know? And that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Right?
And so we had to regroup, sit down, and really figure out exactly how we're going to fix it.
Elevate your skills.
Exactly. Elevate the skill. I think that's the one thing that we say in my gym is that everyone gets to 80% good at something and they think they're professionals.
Right.
And they never get to the skill. They forget how they built that skill, right?
Or and not understanding that when you get there, there's a whole nother level.
Exactly, yeah. And I think most people don't do that, you know? And I think that, you know, everyone, it doesn't matter, like you need to continue learning. You need to continue getting better and networking and talking to people so that your skills sharpen up. And the sharper your skills, the better you are. And then not only that, like there's always one guy richer than you. There's always one guy smarter than you. And just, you know, my old fitness coaches used to say, like, if you went to a seminar and you learned one thing from them, that's a win.
Yes.
Don't walk away saying, I didn't learn anything. It's like, you learned one thing that you didn't know.
Yep.
And you're being negligent or you're being closed-minded if you're not going to learn that.
Right. So in essence, what happened is that it kind of brought you back to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And now your feet were on the ground and you rebuild yourself now with the knowledge, with the skills, everything that was necessary for you to actually start running an effective business the right way.
Correct. And it made a world of a difference. You know, luckily my staff stayed with me, a lot of my staff. The guys that we had lost in Arizona and Nevada, a lot of them followed me to other states. So it was rebuilding with a smaller team. But now understanding what we needed to do, right?
With the full understanding of what's
correct. Up. Correct. So so probably from 2008 to 2011, 2012, I would like to say I was probably dormant at that time.
Okay.
And
we're building skill.
I was building skill. Yeah. So
maybe dormant and as far as like acquiring more properties and all that had to come to an end.
Correct.
Right. But then you had to rebuild stronger, rebuild your foundation.
Correct.
A whole makeover basically.
Yeah, pretty much. And so we had to sit back down and understand and what we wanted to do. And so we needed to build capital again. So 2011, 2012, my dad's like, hey, let's buy something small. Let's buy some houses.
Your dad again.
Yeah. He stepped in. He's like,
all right.
He's like, all right, I think stop feeling sorry for yourself. He's like, this time put the show on the road. I'm like, he's like, are you ready? And I was like, yeah, I guess. And I didn't want to do it, actually. I'm not going to lie to you. He bought like 5 houses in Vegas for like $30,000, $50,000 bucks each. And he's just buying them and renting them. And
does this affect your dad?
Not as much. I think it did to a certain extent, but like my dad, you know, to this day, he always says like, I came here with nothing. I'm leaving you guys. If I leave you 10 units or 100 units more than I ever had, wow. You know, so it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Now, the focus was you lost 700, but you had 700 that were performing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have those other 700, it could have been worse.
Right. Correct. Correct.
I mean, some people only had one house and they lost it all.
Right, you know? Right, right.
Right.
So that helped you guys keep going.
Correct.
But you were still stuck in the painful loss.
Correct.
And so it's 2012 and your dad says, we're going to start buying again.
Yeah.
And what were the thoughts you were having?
Before we get that, is there a way he said it like that kind of, you remember like,
no.
You ready now, bro? You ready to get
I think when we bought the houses, I didn't want to be involved. I think my gym was doing really well. Financially, my mortgage, like I was only doing commercial loans for specialty clients. Mm-hmm. So I was doing really well. And I started questioning, like, why am I doing this? Like, there's no need. Like, I still have these units. I'm making a good salary. I'm making these big commission on commercial loans. My gym's crushing it. Like,
why?
I was like, why? Like, I don't really need to do this.
Your dad had to go dig you up?
I actually, where he dug me up was literally where he was like, all right, I need your help. I was like, ah. So we bought a property right behind the Stratosphere.
Okay.
24 units at 14,000 a door.
Jeez.
Yes. It was being managed by a 92-year-old lady.
Ooh.
Yes.
Wow.
92 years old. She lived there with her son. And she's like, my dad goes, what do you think of this property? I was like, there's this, it's called Naked City, that area. I was like, this is Naked City. This is like the worst area we can buy. And he's like, but this is a great deal. And I'm like,
he doesn't even listen
to
you. That's an area where at night you don't see people walking around.
Correct.
That's how bad it is.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Where is it at?
In Vegas.
In Vegas.
Right behind the Stratosphere.
Behind the Stratosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Like between the Stratosphere and Old Town.
Correct.
No one walks around there.
It's dead. There's no one there. Like you're driving through at night and there is no one walking the streets. You'll see maybe one or two people.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we were there and he's like, what do you want to do? He's like, are you going to help me with this? And I'm like, all right, I guess I'll help you.
I guess I'll do it.
But actually the reason why I'm bringing up the story for this particular building is because it was important to sharpen up more skills. Yeah. And the reason why I bring that is because I got involved. We bought it at 14,000 or after. Now I started analyzing like, okay, do you buy buildings at 14,000 a door or do you buy buildings at 25,000 a door already rehabbed, already operating? Right? Like
no headaches.
Exactly. You start like analyzing that kind of. So
you're seeing everything now from a different angle.
For a whole different angle, right? And we buy this building. We owned it for about a year, less than a year. And again, here I come thinking I'm the smartest guy in the room, right? So we buy it, we rehab it.
Did it take you that much to get to back?
Yeah, no, but check this out. Check out what happened. So we buy this building, rehab it, we fence it up, we do all sorts of cool stuff. It's a great building. I think after total costs of rehab, we're probably maybe 23,000 a door. We sell it for 50,000 a door.
Okay. Doubled your money.
And I'm like,
oh, because you bought them at 14.
I bought them at 14.
But all in, you were about 23. Okay. So you more than doubled
exactly.
Your money.
So I'm the smartest guy in the room. I'm super smart. Look at me, you know? 8 months. So Japanese guy buys it. And literally these guys are from Japan. They come in, they speak no English. They buy the building. All cash, no big deal. And I'm like, oh, this is great. 8 months later, those guys sell it for $85,000 a door. And I'm like, okay, where did I go wrong? I was like, where did I go wrong?
Because you had gotten such a great deal on it. You're like, it's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not knowing.
And they sold it.
And of course, I mean, you had gone the ones you had in Arizona where you wanted to get 19, but mm-hmm. you know, the 20 was pushed into you.
Correct.
So you're like, man, we're getting a 20, we're getting at 14. It's a deal, selling it for 25. Done.
Yeah. No, I'm selling it for 50.
50. He made 27 per door.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
50.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you no problem. You're like, yeah, we gotta do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
all I was cash,
like
cash, no brainer.
Yeah. Right. We were just like, oh yeah, this is easy. Like, you know. Jeez. And then these guys just went ahead and flipped it.
Made them right at 35.
Yeah. So, but again, I it's just like I had to go back to sharpening the skill.
Readjust.
Yeah, readjust. I was like, okay, what are we doing wrong? Why did, you know, and I think that building was really like the pinnacle of, okay, I need to really focus on understanding how these economics work for these buildings. Because again, you know, just, I thought I can get away with some of the basic skills, I guess I had, compared to now it's like, okay, yeah, I won't do that mistake again. You know, I hope not. You know?
After it sold for 80 something a unit, how long did you realize, oh man, it sold for that much?
I knew right after, because the manager we put there was actually a friend. Oh. So we knew like right after. Right, he's like, hey, and he rubbed it in so well. Like, he was like, he calls my dad and goes, hey, you know, they sold the building for, and I was like, my dad calls me and he's like, did you know this? I'm like, ooh. I was like, no, I didn't know, actually. I was like, I didn't
know what happened here.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. It was like, I didn't know. But I mean, it's a lesson. I mean, we bought other buildings in that
Pelton, of course.
But it's just like, oh man, I should have been more prepared. You know.
So at what point did you start understanding that, where you're like, no, we're not gonna give them away that way?
Yeah, I think what we started realizing is that the appreciation on most of these properties, especially the forced appreciation, is a game changer depending what part of the country you're in, right? Mm-hmm. And we started realizing that if, you know, something that I had learned in the CCIMs is that you can forecast all this stuff. You know, if you have the technical skill to do it, you can forecast it. That's how these guys that are
future buying, value.
Yeah, you can figure out the future values on it. So it's like, you know, there's no need to give them away. And does it make, and I think at the end of the day, if priced correctly, it will always sell.
Yeah.
Right?
Someone will see that future value.
Correct. Someone will see that future value. And especially in the area, the market, the conditions, like all of that plays a role. You know, all of that plays a role. And I think that those skills are sometimes they're blinded by the money, right? So we get blinded by the money, like,
because you're doing well.
Yeah. So it's just like, hey, I'm gonna make $1 million in a year or 6 months or whatever, and like, why not just sell it?
Yeah,
right?
The comps are this anyways. Yeah, like,
who cares? Yeah, but then you don't start realizing that, you know, all the depreciation that goes into it. You don't realize how, you know, all of those factors play a role. And if you're not paying attention to that, you're getting the short end of the stick at the end of the day. And if you don't start understanding the financing portion of it, of how a building operates, and this might not be your profession, and that's okay. But if you're gonna play the game, you gotta understand it, because you're gonna lose in the long run.
Any game. If you're gonna play any game, you gotta understand it.
Yeah, you gotta understand it. It's easy to get lost.
Right. You know? I mean, and boy, did you get you not only became, right, you really had to understand it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. And right when you walked in, you had to readjust right away.
Right away. And you know what? And it's interesting, that readjustment is so important, because if not, we had received so many offers like, hey, sell us this building and sell the, you know, we got an offer just recently, actually. They want us to sell like two of our Vegas properties. They offered us a ridiculous amount, like almost over $100 million for these two buildings. I of course, with research and time and understanding what they're doing, we figured out that the zoning in that area just changed.
Mm.
So now they can build homes, and I own like two city blocks. It's a huge property. So the money would have been really, really nice,
yeah, right,
to say,
yeah,
oh my God, we're going to get $100 million. But you know, it's what would have been left on the table.
Yeah. Another 100 million.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Cause they would have built X amount of homes on that property. And it's like, and we didn't have the necessity, but you know, and you guys understand there's like expenses, there's all the
cost,
the cost that comes with it.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
So it's just different.
So do you have kids?
I do.
How many do you have?
Two daughters.
How old are they?
9 and 12.
Okay. This is a question I have to ask. Are you going to get your kids involved, even though they're girls, in understanding how the rentals work and how to manage and all that stuff?
So it's, so first of all, my daughters don't know what I do. They think I just own a gym.
Oh, okay.
And I used to own a restaurant too. So they think I'm a chef right now. And a gym owner is really what they think I do.
You used to do prep meals and
no. We used to own a I partner with a gentleman named Ross Pingling. So one of the better chefs in Orange County. If you guys have a chance, go check him out.
Where's it at?
Orange County.
What's the name of the restaurant?
He has a terrace at by Mix.
Okay.
And he has that one. He has two more. I don't know the names off the top of my head. Our company was Mix Kitchen Bar in Santa Ana.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he's probably one of the better chefs in Orange County. But yeah, he's at the South Coast Plaza. He has two locations, three locations on the other side or whatnot. But yeah, so that's what they think I did. And so they think I used to be just like a restaurateur.
I'm
like,
oh.
But slowly, like we're starting to introduce to them like what dad does. Like it's like, so they're just starting to understand like, oh, so you have this, so they pay you? I'm like, yeah, they pay to live there. It's like, but why? You know, and like there is just explaining all. So I do try to teach them business lessons.
Good.
That is my number one thing with them. And I think that is one of the hardest things to teach is like business lessons. And the big thing I get crazy with my daughters, but is follow through. Like you got to follow through.
Okay.
You know? Like they had a track meet this weekend and she was like, I don't want to go. I was furious. I was like, you're going,
your dad.
Yeah. I was like, you're going and you're going to give it 100%. I don't care if you lose, but you're going to give it 100%. I don't care. You know? So in that aspect, to answer your question, so I apologize. To answer your question, I prefer them to understand how it runs and they can choose if they want to run it.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
You know?
Got it. Got it.
If you were to tell someone that's going through some stuff, right? Like I was telling you earlier, there's people that are losing their girlfriend. They're thinking about just calling it quits. Man, you guys lost 700 homes and you bounce back, right? If you were to look at someone that's going through an issue, right? If you were to give them some advice of what you went through, right? To push back, to not quit, right? To just give it your all again, what would you say to them?
Man, that's a good question. I would say that everything in the moment is probably not well, and that's understandable. But whatever you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. And I think most people are too worried about what everybody else is saying and concerned about instead of them being worried about what they can do. Because you have the ability to make changes in any aspect.
Yeah.
If I wake up and I have a bad attitude, guess what? Your attitude sucks all day.
Yep. Yeah.
If I wake up and I feel like,
and you make other people's days.
Exactly. And I think that most people, they have this like, I need it now mentality instead of it takes time and it takes work.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends that are famous DJs and social media, like millions of followers on YouTube and stuff like that. Like these guys work, like they're working hard all the time, you know? And most of them that are extremely successful are the ones that are like, they don't take a no for the answer. Like there's no, it's like, okay, let me figure it out.
Right.
You know? And for the guys that are, or men and women that are, they think life is over because of a certain scenario, you know, I mean, that's a hard pill to swallow because there's so much opportunity if you just make the effort.
If you just go through it.
That's it. You know, it's like a bad workout. You know, like there's a big rule that they say that, you know, you don't know what someone has until they go through a bad workout, right? Like we say that a lot in the fitness world. You know, these people that, like my best friend, he's 60 years old.
And when you say bad, you mean like rough.
Rough, yeah, right. Yeah. And like you tend to associate yourself with people that have been through the dirt, right? Because those people will guide you and help you. And the problem is that if you're feeling bad for yourself and you can't get out of it, you might need to find new friends, right? That can help you and say, hey, you know,
snap
what?
Out of it.
Yeah, snap out of it, man. Like, let's get out of this. Like, it's not that bad, you know? Wow. So I don't know, just random thoughts, I guess.
Okay. So what's next for you and your family in regards to what's the next goal?
Man, there's a couple things. We want it. This is a personal goal. So I want to get to 1,000 units.
Okay.
So I want to get there and then I'll be done.
And this time is consciously.
Yes. Yeah. This is not, and this is also getting there by skill, not by luck.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, because some of us get lucky. And I would like to say I was very lucky. I'm very lucky. I'm very fortunate. And I never take that for granted because if not everybody has the opportunity I've had, but, so I want to get to 1,000 units. I'm probably going to semi-retire at like 50. So I got 3 more years to go.
Okay.
And then probably fully retire 55. I want to travel with my daughters and like have a good time. And then the other thing is I hope this doesn't come out wrong, but I really feel that the skills I have, I want to help people. I see a lot of people that want to build a real estate portfolio. They're like, how do I get to where you got to? Mm-hmm. And I think the times are a little different. It takes a different skill. And we're creating like software programs that are.
You have a course?
So we should.
There's another company right there.
Yeah. Well, we just started. This past weekend, we just did for our first seminar was a like leasing seminar. We just started doing that. Just because I feel bad for, and I'll make this quick, but I feel bad for people that have like leased, like the lady I did this. There's couple people that went this weekend and we did the seminar. This lady's been at this one location for 26 years. She's put all her effort into this restaurant and her lease is going to expire next year. First of all, she didn't even know her lease was going to expire next year. So, and she thought she was month to month. The owner is 90 years old and the sons are going to take over. And to tell people in their face, like, if you don't negotiate this now, you will have no restaurant.
You're gonna have to shut it down.
And you're gonna have to shut it down. And I've
her whole life.
Yeah. And I've realized that, you know, people, renters or tenants or whatever you want to see, like they lose the opportunity because they shut their minds that they can't do anything else with it. They don't think like I can afford this house. They don't think I can afford this building. They don't think that, you know, there is some type of wealth to it.
Yeah.
In it. And like at this event, I told a lot of people, I'm like, you've been at your businesses for 10, 15 years. You've never thought about buying the location
or building.
Yeah. You never thought of there. I didn't think I could. It's like, well, that's because you didn't ask.
They never even tried.
You never even tried. Like people that like, you know, in your guys' industry, people come up to you and like, I didn't think I can afford this house. Dude, have you tried? Did you try?
Right.
Yep.
They're just thinking.
Yeah, they just think. I just think I can't.
And at that point, they stop.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's like that's something that we want to do. And we want to help. I want to help tenants. And then we have a software program that we're also trying to do to help landlords that we created. We just did the copyright on it. So
awesome.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how
that goes. Congrats, man. That's huge. Big things coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that the software like changes the whole industry.
The game, yeah.
Yeah. We really feel like it will, you know.
Beautiful. So I know you usually ask that this question about, go ahead.
No, go because I have another one after that.
Okay, so if you were to do this all over again, what's the one thing you would do different?
Oh, man. I would say I would network more. I didn't network enough. I was in my own bubble.
Tell us more about that.
So if you had to go back, you would change something?
Yeah. So I would network more. You guys know the story about Albertsons, the market?
No.
No? Okay. So quick story here. So the Albertson market owners, there's two brothers, somewhere in the Midwest or whatever. There's two brothers.
Okay.
So an investor comes to both brothers and said, hey, we want to franchise this, or like we want to expand your business. One of the brothers says, no, we have a good thing here. You know, the Albertson brothers. And the other brother was like, yeah, this seems like a great idea. The brother that didn't expand, his business went under. And then the other brother obviously owns all the Albertsons, you know?
Wow.
And I faced that personally.
Okay.
So my acquaintance, his name is Steve Siegel. He owns Siegel in Las Vegas, like Siegel Suites and all those, probably owns about 22,000 apartments. And the biggest difference that I learned from them is that he got a partner. Mm-hmm. He got a partner and he networked and he was friends with Oscar Goodman and like all the big names in Las Vegas. And I was just, I didn't want to talk to anybody.
You were busy working.
I was too busy working. And not only that, I didn't want to hear people, because it was a poor mentality of saying, what are you going to teach me? Like, I'm here. What are you bringing to the table to teach me? And that's one of probably the biggest mistakes I've done, because again, I closed my mind. I didn't listen to anyone because I thought I was here. Right. And that's a shitty attitude.
Yeah.
And I should have listened to even the smallest advice, and I didn't, you know? So that's what I would.
That's huge, man. Wow. Be around the right people.
Before we close up, you went through a lot, you know, what's the biggest lesson you learned from this whole thing?
I think the biggest lesson at the end of the day is just not give up. It really is. No, it really is. Like,
that's our podcast, man.
And that's the thing though. Like, you know, I think, you know, there's always going to be hiccups. There's always going to be problems.
Yeah.
That's just part of life.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I'm dealing with a client right now that he got his phase two is he has a bunch of environmental issues, and literally told me, he's like, oh, I'm going to give up. It's like, well, let's figure out some options, man. Like,
yes.
I was like, if you're going to give up, and then I'll buy it from you. You know what I mean? Like,
it's me.
Like, if you're going to give it away, like, I might as well take it, you know, but
that in my pocket.
Exactly. So I think at the end of the day, like, there's always a bad day, and that's okay. And there's always a bad week, and that's okay. There's a bad month, and that's okay. And you might have a bad year, and that's okay. But if you're just going to give up for that, I mean, dude, you have two bad years out of your, let's say if you have a shitty lifestyle,
right?
65 years of your life, that's not that bad.
That's not bad.
And some people can't even have a bad moment.
Exactly.
Right? And they lose it for a while.
Yeah. And that's the problem, is that you can't, no matter what, like whatever effort you put into it, that's what you're going to get out of it.
Got it. And my last question for you, man, if you had a chance to start all over, who would you become?
Oh man. And start all over is in like my, in life, in business,
everything.
Or today.
Yeah.
You know, I think, I mean, there's just a lot of people that I wish I can like mesh into, you know? And, you know, I would love to take like, you know, the hard frame mindset from, you know, like my dad, but take like the creativity of like my uncle, you know, and then like of my mom, like the softness, but the way of how to like talk to people. Like my mom's
tact.
Yeah, she's like smooth.
Yeah.
You know, she'll like tell you off, like with a smile, you know, and you're like,
what about it?
Yeah, you feel good. Like, oh man, she just told me
that was nice.
You know? Like, thank you. Yeah. So like, she's like super smooth and like, you know, like have the patience of like my sister. And like, I think, so there wouldn't be one particular person, but I would say I would love to just gel to a bunch of different people. Yeah.
Well, there you guys have it. Anything else for you?
Wow. No. Maybe one last question. Mm-hmm. So having gone through all of that and having to deal with stress, it seems like you can handle quite a bit of stress.
I think, okay, so I strongly believe this. Stress is just a mindset of bullshit problems you didn't solve.
Right. And if you open up that
it's door, a choice,
man, because... You were going through some stuff.
Yeah.
Right. But the mentality of yours changed.
Yeah.
Right. So now you're just saying, okay, well, stress is just a mindset.
Yeah.
I got to switch the mindset.
Yeah. You know, the thing about stress and like for people in general, like it's also, I tell this to my staff all the time when they're having problems. I was like, your problems are self-inflicted. I don't want to hear it. They're self. This tenant's an asshole. You rented to that tenant. Yeah. It's like you rented to him.
Yeah.
So now you're going to deal with
it. Put a gun on your head. Say, hey, rent it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Person.
You know, hey, I have to get to a meeting. I'm rushing. Oh my God, I'm so stressed. You should have left earlier.
Yeah.
You know, oh man, I'm behind on the mortgage. You should have not taken that Cancun trip or buying that Louis Vuitton wallet. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should have paid your mortgage. You know what I mean? Like, that's really what it is.
Yep.
So in my perspective, it's all self-inflicted.
Beautiful.
You know?
Whether you guys have it, you know, if anyone wants to follow you or learn from you, I mean, I know you have a ton to teach, right?
Thank you.
Where can they follow you? Where can they find you?
On Instagram primarily, Oscar_Ramos_co.
Okay.
That's it.
Guys, pretty much an expert in the industry, whether you want to believe it or not, the amount of stuff that you've learned and been involved with in your career and what you've scaled, you're considered an expert in the industry. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you for telling me because I don't believe it myself. But
okay, well, let me tell you.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here. We'll see you on our next episode. And thanks to Oscar. We had a great interview. Thanks, guys.
Hey, you guys want to follow us? You guys can follow No Quitters Podcast at No Quitters Instagram. Just like that, No Quitters.